It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282. And let's talk legal.
And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are in the studio with us. Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, a few weeks ago, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we had a program here called What Happens When You Die Without a Will.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This day, we're going to talk about What Happens When You Die Without a Will, Part 2.
Okay.
Because we certainly did not finish the program, and then we went into kind of some hurricane information and some talk and conversation about what some of our listeners can do to think about hurricane damage, etc. But today, let's move back to what happens in the state of North Carolina when you die without a will. Ben, at the first part of the program, again, a couple of weeks ago, we really didn't get into the guts of it because I was so busy talking about that when you die without a will, there's the first decision is who is going to be the administrator slash executor. Same duties, same responsibilities, a little bit different terminology. Well, you know, who is going to be the administrator?
Mm-hmm.
And as we discussed on the program, that sometimes can create circumstances that send the file over to the litigators of the world like Mr. Collins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second issue is, will everybody consent to the waiver of the bond? So maybe we know who the administrator is going to be because of possibly a preference, but all of the heirs in the estate will not sign a waiver of the bond. There is no will. Keep in mind, we're talking about today when you die without a will.
Right.
So there is no waiver of the bond, and the heirs of the estate are going to need to waive that bond. So again, Ben, we spent a whole program just talking about those two things because those items in and of itself can begin to greatly slow down and complicate even the beginnings, even the attempt to open up the estate of a loved one when there is no will.
Right.
Now, the next thing that we're going to talk about, we'll get into the guts of it here a little bit, but let's just begin by saying that our listeners might be surprised. So many wills that Wes and I prepare, so many estate plans when folks are married, it is a lot of times that the husband leaves everything to the wife and the wife to the husband.
Right.
And then, of course, to the children. But in an intestacy pattern, when we die without a will, we have to begin to ask all sorts of questions. First of all, are there children? And if there are children, then we have to ask how many children. If there's only one child of the couple, married couple, then, of course, one half of the real estate passes to the spouse and the other half passes to the one child. That's a huge difference.
Yes, it is.
Okay. If there's two or more children, then it drops to a third. A third goes to the spouse, and the other portion is divided amongst the equally between the children.
Right.
Now that has to do with real estate, which we've talked about before is land. And the land, of course, would include the improvements to it, such as what we call the house. And so the distribution as we see is very different potentially than what we see in a will. Again, one half if there's only one child, a third if there's more than one child. In terms of money and personal property, which would be, quote, everything else in the estate, it's $60,000 off the top to the spouse, and then one half again if it is, if there's just the one child. $60,000 again still off the top if there's two or more children. But after the $60,000, you know, one-third goes to the spouse and two-thirds of the personal property or many times money, if you will, bank accounts, stocks, et cetera, to the children. So it's very, very different if you die without a will.
And it certainly runs counter to what most people think. I mean, really, what most people on the street think.
No doubt. And, you know, you might listen to what Cecil has just described and think, well, okay, I thought that a lot of the estate goes to the state of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't sound that bad that maybe a third goes to my spouse and the rest of it then is split among the kids in general or something, you know, whatever the situation is as far as how many children there are.
Mm-hmm.
But think about, let's say, if you have a second marriage and you have kids from a previous marriage and maybe they don't get along with the second spouse because it's not their mother.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the home place is only owned a third by this person. So, but the kids really want their money out of the property. When I say a third,
yes.
I mean the spouse.
Right.
Well, they then have the right upon the death to then partition to force the sale of the property. Okay. So that could be a huge problem. You know, other things that you think about with regard to all of this, I can't tell you how many cases we've had over the years where we hear the words, I know he did a will.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't know where it is.
Right.
So there's, you know, calls to every lawyer in Carter County, Craven County, you know, trying to find out whether, you know, we have a will or not. And that's just, in many cases, it feels like it's trying to find a needle in a haystack. So that is maybe a little bit of a different issue, but still, in the event there is a will that's done, let's make sure that our family knows where it is. Keep it with your important documents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can file it for safekeeping in the courthouse if you want to do that. You don't have to do that, but there's no filing requirement for a will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like a deed. It's not like, you know, it's not good until you actually, you know, record it. And that's a whole nother show we can talk about as far as the race to the courthouse.
Well, let me ask that one question because I think some people may be confused right off the beginning. They thought, well, you know, because husband and wife own real property differently than a partners would own it.
Right.
They thought, well, I thought that would make that automatically just go.
If it's titled that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If it's titled jointly between the husband and wife, then, of course, under those circumstances, the survivor will take the entirety of the real property.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, Ben, you hear that. You hear, well, you know.
It was his house.
Well, you hear that. You hear, well, the property, we're married, so it passes upon death to the survivor. And then the survivor or the person passes away and we find out, well, it was just in the decedent's name.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't titled jointly, tenants by entirety. So it doesn't pass by operation of law. So you can't, you know, if you have fuzzy thinking about that.
Right.
And you really don't know exactly how your assets are titled. You know, you haven't done the will. You know, you haven't explained where the will is located.
Right.
For safekeeping. Then we can run into a lot of problems.
And we brought this up before because more and more people own property together that are not married. And so that complicates it. Even if they get married, they may not have retitled it.
Exactly.
That's correct.
You really can't make any assumptions, Ben. Our listeners just can't.
Mm-hmm.
The person should go seek some legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
Because the devil is in the details. It's all about the facts, as you just mentioned.
Right.
There are many people who own property, before they get married and then are married for 35 years and have a house that they built on it together, but the lot was something that the son or the daughter inherited, and it's in their name only.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As you mentioned, there are people who are now together who are in long-term relationships who are not married, but yet are in a home together, sharing the expenses on the home. So, again, these are the questions that are going to come out in a conference with a good lawyer. The devil is in the details. The lawyer is going to sift through and ask and inquire on these things because we're trained to do that, and that's what we do in order to have the plan consistent from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, next, we talked about if there are children. What if there are no children and folks are married? Well, if there's a spouse, then everything will, in that case, go to the spouse.
Right.
All right. If for some reason, however, There is no spouse, mm-hmm. okay, mm-hmm. but there are parents or either one parent, then everything will go up the line to the parent.
Right, right. So it is a fascinating part of the law, and it's something that is worth studying about and hearing about, and we'll have more. But if you have questions, I'm sure you do, you can give us a call, 247-7282, 247-7282. Ask your questions of Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins here on Let's Talk Legal. Hey, welcome back here. Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for joining us here today as we take a look at what's going on in your legal life. You're welcome to call in with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins here at the microphones. You can reach us at 247-7282.
You know, Ben, kind of sitting back listening to this with Cecil's, leading off the program today, talking about what happens if you die without a will.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the themes that you hear when you listen to this is that sometimes, folks think, well, my family's going to do right by everybody anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have to worry about my family. I think I've got everything pretty much in order. I trust my kids. I've remarried, but right. They get along. They'll just do right by everybody. Well, as the attorney who sees that after the fact, after mm-hmm. the person has died, that is certainly what we hope happens. And in many cases, it does, even if things weren't left.
Right.
As the decedent.
If they weren't tidy.
Yep. If they weren't tidy, if they weren't left as the decedent really wanted them to be left, or maybe inconsistent with, his or her intentions. But there are certainly many, many cases where the money makes a difference.
Well, in many cases, too, the person who has passed away, the decedent, was the glue.
Right. That's right.
And now it becomes unglued.
That's right. In many cases, that's correct. You've got maybe the second marriage, kids from a previous marriage, the decedent, kind of kept everybody happy with each other, the mm-hmm. second spouse or third spouse, whatever it may be, and the children from a previous marriage, and all of a sudden he or she, in most cases it would be, in my mind, I'm thinking through this, it would mm-hmm. be he who's,
right.
who's deceased, and now the glue is gone, and now it's all about the money. And we have had many cases, many, many cases where things were not set up correctly because there was just a failure to plan, failure to think through these things, failure to sit down and make sure that everything was, all the I's were dotted, T's were crossed, and everything was going to pass the way the person
right.
wanted in the past.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden it is line drawn in the sand about who gets what.
Mm-hmm.
And, in many cases, those type cases, those situations, they end up in court, ends up costing a good bit of money, when just a little bit of expense, a little bit of cost and sitting down with someone to get this in order would have resolved that so as to avoid the fight.
There you go.
Ben, some of the same talk that Wes is mentioning is kind of based on the contingency thinking. We've talked about that before in the mm-hmm. area of estate planning. How about these contingencies? In other words, like Wes is saying, my family will do right with me. I know my spouse, she's the second spouse, let's say, I know that she knows what we've agreed to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. But what if the contingency applies that she isn't able? She's aging too. And now she's unable to follow out the plan. And it's her son or daughter under her power of attorney
mm-hmm.
that are following out the plan, you see. My son knows what's going to do. He's going to do everything right by the family. But the son now isn't living.
Mm-hmm.
Or the son also has become older and is unable to act out in the way that the parent thought that the son would. So, see, even in real life, even without documents, these contingencies begin to play out. We have a lot of files where folks are acting under authority of the power of attorney, as in an agency relationship with regard to filing for a spousal allowance or filing for the elective share statute. And of course, this might not be the case if the principal were, you know, were doing well, but the principal is not doing well,
right,
and therefore their agent is acting on their behalf. It's one thing to expect your particular person to work it all out, as Wes is mentioning. It's another thing when that particular person isn't in the picture anymore.
Yeah, and to add to that, I mean, when you have an executor that you've chosen, then you have, that executor may have a little bit of wisdom and leeway and can make some judgment calls, depending on, of course, how you write that. But if you leave it up to the state of North Carolina and under administrator, then they're going to be, that's going to run.
Correct.
The law is going to be prevail
now,
here.
Now, hovering over all of this issue, these issues about one third and 60,000, you know, and one half and 60,000, these very precise, pieces of law that we've espoused this morning. Hovering around all of that, Ben, as you mentioned, of course, is the issue of how assets are titled. Okay. I mean, if an IRA has a beneficiary and the beneficiary is the adult son or the three children or the spouse, then that's the way that IRA is going to pass. And it's not going to pass, you know, based on these one third, one half, $60,000 issues that we've discussed this morning.
Or maybe a charity that's been named as a beneficiary.
Well,
it could be something else entirely.
Any number of, of possibilities. So when you're in there talking with your lawyer is going to also ask questions about, well, tell me about the assets and let's discuss how they are titled. And if they are not sure of this, which some clients are not, then we need to ask them to get that information. Most clients do know how it's titled, but we have them check behind their beneficiary designations on their IRA, on their life insurance, on their annuities. We have them look carefully at the way they have maybe their CDs and or bank accounts registered, because the registration of an account and or the beneficiary of an account is going to, as we've discussed in this program many times, that's going to trump everything, whether we have a will or we do not have a will, you see.
Right.
That applies to both scenarios. Even if you have a will that leaves everything to your children, a third, a third, a third, but you have a beneficiary designation on your life insurance that's to the church is going to prevail.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So these are some of the questions that may come up and when you die without a will. So let's get some of those answers, too. If you would like to call in with your questions, 247-7282. And as always, you can go to the website, harvellandcollins.com. Listen to past shows. They're all labeled as well, too, so you can pick them by subject. You can go and find out more there and join us for more here with Harvell and Collins and Let's Talk Legal. And welcome back to the program. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, talking about what happens when you die without a will.
So, you know, Cecil was mentioning the interplay between the accounts that we may have, life insurance, annuities, IRAs, these type accounts that have either a beneficiary designation or held jointly with right of survivorship. So these things are controlled by the client really outside of the office of the lawyer. The lawyer who is preparing the will or the trust or the estate plan can give advice to the client about, look, you need to change your beneficiary designation to this, 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 whatever it may be, so that the estate plan works with these beneficiary designations. And I very often, sitting down with clients, prepare in many cases what I refer to as a homework sheet. Right on it, homework for what Hoover Klein is. Do 1, 2, 3. This is what you need to do. Because see, the lawyer can't call up, you know, the broker and start making changes on beneficiary designations because we don't have the authority to do it.
Right.
The client, you know, has to do that. Now, conventional wisdom with regard to that is that, you know, kind of what brokers are taught, what bankers are taught in general, is that we don't want to leave those assets into our estate mm-hmm. because then they're subject to the taboo word of probate. Well, that might be true right. in many jurisdictions, but in most cases is not true in North Carolina. In many cases, I am in fact recommending to my clients to leave their these type accounts to their estate because we have certain things that need to get funded from the estate. Like, for example, trust for minor children,
right.
trust for grandchildren. You know, if you have an account that is left directly to someone,
mm-hmm.
but we have a what's called a testamentary trust, meaning a trust that is set up through the will or pours over through the will,
mm-hmm.
the money that passes directly to the person never goes into the estate, so we don't have the asset to fund the trust. So, Cecil, in many cases, that's a conversation that I'm having with folks. It's a conversation that I'm recommending that we're going to direct some or all the assets into the estate so we fund this estate plan that we've worked very hard on.
We do this routinely,
mm-hmm.
okay, where the beneficiary of even an IRA
yeah.
is the estate. It's not optimum.
Mm-hmm.
It's not optimum, Ben, but again, a professional who specializes in this area, a lawyer such as myself and Wes, there are instances where that's best.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many instances where, an annuity or a life insurance policy or anything of that nature would have a beneficiary that is the estate. If someone has a life insurance policy and they want it divided, amongst their grandchildren, some of which are minors,
mm-hmm.
then they need a trust that will outline when does the minor receive the life insurance proceeds, and that would be in the context of the trust, and the beneficiary would be the estate.
Now, another twist to that would be, okay, well, I have this life insurance. Why don't I name the beneficiary this trust you're talking about so it doesn't come into probate?
Right.
One of the main reasons why is because in many cases – the estate passes based on percentages. For example, I leave one quarter of my estate to this trust,
mm-hmm.
one quarter to this trust for this child, grandchild. Well, we don't know when the person is going to die,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know what assets the person is going to have. And if the intent is to break it down by percentages, which it usually is, then if you leave this one life insurance policy all into this particular trust, that might be everything you have when you die.
Right.
We don't know that.
Right.
So we try to put together an estate plan that's going to roll with the punches, the ups and downs, the circumstances that may come up
mm-hmm.
to reach the intent of the testator, because we're going to assume this is going to be the last will you ever do every time we do it.
Okay.
Right.
Again, if you want to find out more, you want to call on the folks at Harbell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Make that appointment or go online at harbellandcollins.com, listen to past shows, and give them a call, and set up that appointment at 252-726-9050.